Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. This week, I'm joined all the way across the other side of our country here in the United States, out of Manhattan. We're joined by Francesco Maggisano. How are you doing, Francesco?
I am so excited to be here. I'm doing great.
It's cool to have you on. Francesco, you are a blind athlete who has experience in multisport, has experience in cycling. And even last week, you got second in road and TT Nats at the Paracycling National Championships in Boise, correct?
Yep.
This is super cool to have you. So we're making a big push right now with accessibility right now and building out those features within Trainer Road. And it's just an honor to be able to do that. And it's super cool to be able to talk to you, a high level performing athlete like this, that does a lot of different things here. So, Francesco, first things that I want to talk about is I want to set the scene in the context. So when you were you born visually impaired, or how did you come about to the point where you were actually legally blind where you are now?
Yeah. So when I was born, I had my full sight actually. And when I was about 11 months old, I got a rare form of childhood eye cancer called retinoblastoma. And so the first few years of my life with a bunch of chemo and radiation and just cancer treatment, and I eventually lost one eye. So I have an eye prosthetic and a functional eye in the other eye. And so I had, decent vision, not driver's license decent, but decent enough to ride a single bike down the road sort of safely up until I was about 16. And that's when, there was a little bit of a reoccurrence. And then I lost the rest of my sight. And so I'm 26 now. So for the past 10 years, I've had zero.
So you mentioned that, riding a bike as a kid and everything else. Did you have to make adjustments when you were young, learning to ride a bike, learning to do all the other different sports? Did you have to make adjustments then, just having the one eye?
Definitely. So having one eye, it forces me to turn my head a little bit, because obviously I didn't have, the sight on. So I have my right eye, but not the left one. Or back then I did. So, the whole entire left side, I couldn't see. So I turned my head. So it almost looked like I was, constantly looking off to the left, whereas I was just trying to center the one eye that I had. So I wouldn't crash into anything. Mm-hmm. And then even like the one I had wasn't perfect. So it was a lot of just being, trying to be very aware so that, I can't really see it, or I couldn't really see an obstacle far off in the distance. So it would just be very, focus. So at the moment I'd catch something, I could respond or something. It was just riding, bikes around the beach, just nothing, no racing or anything like that. Just very, very chill.
So were you always like an athletic, or were you doing a lot of different sports, or just cycling as a kid? Like, when did you really choose cycling, I guess, is the main question.
I wouldn't call it cycling as a kid. Yeah. It's sure. Very much, beach cruiser vibe. Right. The furthest I had run was a couple hundred meters, like chasing the ice cream truck as a kid. Sure. And the furthest I'd biked was 15 minutes to the beach. So definitely not a lot of endurance. I did powerlifting through high school and a little college. So very non-endurance sport. And then actually when I was back in 2017, I met a guy in a grocery store who saw that I had a cane, saw that I was totally blind. And he just walked up to me and said, "Hey, there's a running group that meets in the park nearby called Achilles. You should Google them and check them out." And so I didn't know the guy, and I just went home, Googled it. And it's this adaptive running organization called Achilles International. And that's how I got started running. So I've never actually run, distance or anything like that as a sighted person. It's totally new to me after I lost my sight.
Wow. Holy cow. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about Achilles, because that's what you do for work now, correct?
Yeah. So I started off as an athlete, right, with a disability, running with them. And after a few years, there was a spot opening up as their director of their multisport program. And so I took that position. And then a year later, I moved up to basically now my role now, which is the director of the New York City Metro region, which is basically all our chapters in like Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn. And then still with the multi-sport stuff. So just, managing this, our local chapters. It's an organization that serves all different types of people with disabilities. So not just people who are blind, but like amputees, brain injuries, learning disabilities, all different types. And just gets them out, moving and running and social.
How cool. Super rewarding work, I imagine.
It's very fun. And it helps that I also, because I started from the athlete side, it's cool perspectives.
Yeah, no doubt. And you get to double dip, so to speak. I assume like, you get to do the sports you love, combine it with work.
Right.
What? So your first foray into endurance sport then, was it running? And then right. did
exactly.
you? So what did you go to multi-sport first and then eventually cycling? How did that journey work?
Yeah. So I started off running, and actually my second time showing up to an Achilles workout, I was walking to the park and I ran into the director of the multi-sport program before me named Charles. And he actually recruited me for the tri team. It was like, you know, do you swim? No, not really. Do you ever been on a tandem bike? No, never. All right, cool. You know, you're on the triathlon team. So, you know, it's very much like, you know, you're in, you know, how much do you know kind of thing. So, yeah, never been on a tandem. First time I was on a tandem, I was absolutely terrified. It was not an inspiring or glorious experience at all. And so, you know, I came home and I was like, I need to get better at this, right? It was so much fun, but I was very fearful for most, if not all of it. So wow. it was definitely a journey. It was not like, you know, natural born cyclist or anything like that.
How did the experience compare from what you had of your memories of riding as a kid mm-hmm. and then later on riding on a tandem as a blind athlete? Was it a totally different experience? Did you feel the same feelings that you felt and that's why you liked it? What was different?
No, well, so it's a lot of, you have to give up all the control, right? Like being in the back. Well, first of all, mechanically, I had to untrain my habit of, you know, when you're on a single bike and the bike starts to lean or you start to turn, you automatically, even subconsciously, right, like turn the bars to sort of compensate. Mm-hmm. If you do that on tandem, your pilot seat turns and you crash. So you have to completely untrain the instinct to turn your bars when the bike leans, which that really got me. Like, I wasn't prepared for that at all. Wow. And then even just like the mental control, right? Because you don't shift, you don't brake, you know, you're cycling and you hear like horse carriages and trucks and all the stuff around you. And there's just, it's just complete faith, right? In the person in front. And so it definitely took some time to get used to. And even now when I ride with someone new, even if I know that they're a good cyclist, there's always the little thing of like, are they going to remember to tell me that we're stopping at a light or, you know, cause even experienced pilots, they forget, right? You're focused on so many different things and you just forget once to tell your athlete we're stopping in, you know, at a light instead of just rolling through it kind of thing. So,
wow.
Yeah. It's fun. But I say that it's a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Relinquishing control. I just hope. Yeah. Sounds great. Yeah. Sounds
good. Yeah. Fun. Well, actually, so I'm in part of my job with the tri team is training new sighted pilots for to ride tandem. And so something that we do is actually we have our sighted pilots ride in the back of a tandem at least once, just so that they can experience it. Mm. And so, like some of our sighted pilots make for the worst tandem rider because they hate giving up the control, right? So they're in the back trying to shout directions and trying to still be in control. And, you know, it does not work out.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I could understand that. Are they blindfolded in some way or something as well? They're in this.
No, I mean, probably maybe we'll start doing that. I don't know. Good suggestion, but no, they're still looking around, which, you know, just, I don't know. It's good to experience, right? From both perspectives.
For sure. It's what makes a good sighted pilot versus a standard cyclist. I don't know if you have that insight in that regard, but I'd be curious if they're kind of different. The demands are different.
It's all the temperament, right? If you can be in control and you can sound like you're in control and just not panic when a situation's developing, that's everything, right? I mean, obviously it's great if you're strong or confident on the bike, all that, but just having the mindset, the unflappable mindset, right? Where it's, you know, you can be in as sticky a situation as it can get, but you'll communicate calmly. You won't, you know, lose, you won't panic or do anything like that. You know, I think the moment the pilot starts panicking a little bit and isn't clear in their direction to their athlete, that's when things tend to go a little sideways. Mm. No pun intended.
Yeah. Good one. I could. That's so that in the context of road racing, and you and I even talked before we went on about the concept of you would be excited at the concept of having a tandem crit for blind amazing. Athletes, which
it'd be amazing.
that's something I'm terrified. I'm terrified just racing them as is with vision. I can't imagine having to trust somebody else through there, but is that, I guess that that is a big thing that I didn't think about, is you kind of are two people, but kind of united in one, in the sense mm-hmm. that their temperament keeps you calm. Are there other things that you do to work together as two riders that maybe a cyclist like myself that has never had that experience doesn't understand?
Yeah, definitely. So like from a mechanical standpoint, it really, you can tell when people are riding, when they have experience with each other. Cause I mean, even just like going through turns, cornering, climbing, standing, just it's so much coordination, right? Because, you know, obviously the bike is one. So if both pilot and athlete can synchronize, you know, even from something as basic as balance to, you know, all the way up to just when you shift your weight or how much weight are you putting into a turn? Like also I'm, you know, a larger athlete, I'm pretty tall. So some of the pilots I ride with are on the shorter side. So when we're doing 180s, which for some reason, every tandem race I do, there tends to be a lot of 180s, which on a tandem, you know, on a one lane road, trying to corner a tandem at speed is a little questionable. So just getting, getting that, you know, the confidence, even if mechanically the pilot knows exactly what to do, it's even just getting their confidence up that, yes, you know, you can lean the bike and it's not going to go down. You can really just treat it, you know, race as confident as you would if you were on your single bike, just with a tandem, you know? So, you know, everything from that to just even, you know, you are stuck together. So helping each other out, like sometimes I'll remind my pilots to refuel or drink or eat because, you know, they're just so in it focused on the race that sometimes they'll forget, even if normally if they're racing on their own, they'll never forget. Right. Cause that's their habit. But sometimes when they have another athlete behind them, it just mentally, it just, you know, it requires so much more focus that they'll just forget. So I'm just like, yo, bro, do you eat, you know, do you drink? And a lot of times they'll say no. So, you know, it's teamwork, you know, teamwork at its very basic level.
So in your case, since you are not seeing the things and taking that in and running those feedback loops constantly on what you're seeing, what are you focusing on instead when you are in the back in that stoker position?
Yeah. So obviously I don't have the visual cues. And so I use that as a way to really touch or tap into the way I feel. And that could be anything from maybe the day is a lot more humid or, you know, something than we're used to. So we have to compensate by doing X or, you know, like just tapping into this, the status of the bike, right? The pilot focuses on what's, you know, everything in front of the bike. And I try to focus on what's on the bike. So, you know, are we fueling enough? Are we focusing on just, you know, like keeping track of how many laps, right? A lot of times the pilots will lose track of, I don't know, routes or turns or things like that. And that's something that, because I don't have to worry about the visual side, I have the freedom to worry about that a little more. So it's, you know, divide and conquer the responsibilities, you know?
Interesting. So with your whole trajectory that you had, when did you get to the point you mentioned that signed up for the tri club, jumped right into that. When did you get to the point where you wanted to be competitive and compete in races?
Yeah. So the first ever triathlon I did, it was the best experience I've ever had in my life. And I came in a few minutes after the guy who recruited me, the then tri director. And he's like, yo, I'm seeing you a lot sooner than I thought I would, you know, like you should consider doing this a little more. And so after that, you know, that was the last race of that season. And so I did a few like training camps and it just, you know, you do it. And the deeper I got, the more I wanted to dig. And it just, you know, I signed up for a bunch of races and eventually got to the ITU circuit with triathlon. And then I had an accident in 2018. So the year after I got into sport, where I was run over by an 18 wheeler, like a truck. So that kind of took me out of that season. And, you know, I don't know, like, so with ITU, the way you qualify for the Paralympics is all through points, right, over the course of a year or two. And so that sort of took me out of the whole points game leading up to Tokyo, which is why that's the original thing that sort of got me thinking about the sport of cycling. Was because there is an actual trials event that you could race at and potentially play, you know, go to Tokyo with. So it was a little more easier mentally to understand qualifying for Tokyo with cycling versus triathlon, which is, you know, after COVID hit, I'm like, all right, pools are closed. You know, the qualification process is a lot simpler. Let me try cycling. So
So how do you, focusing on the multi-sport side of things, how do you manage the three different disciplines? So starting with the swim, do you have a guide as well with you on the swim?
So it has to be the same guide for all three sports. And with the swim, you're tethered with a bungee cord or some other type of rope around usually the upper leg. And it's, you know, for running, for example, it's same thing, tether, you know, with a bungee around the waist, but you wouldn't want to use a running tether for the swim because your hand would get caught in it, 'cause it's a little, you know, too high. So you tether around the hip or the knee. And then you do the swim. It's a lot of communication with like tapping on the head or on the shoulders, 'cause you can't, you know, I can't really hear anything when my head's in the water and swimming. So we do there's a lot of like right shoulder tap for right buoy, you know, turn, or left shoulder tap for left buoy turn. Huh. And then if you want to like accelerate, 'cause you're passing someone, you could do like a head tap, or, you know, you figure out your own little code basically between the guide and athlete. And then, as you know, the bike is on a tandem, and then the run again is a tether around the waist or a hand tether. Some people prefer the hand.
Wow. So this is, what was swimming like without, I assume that you had been swimming before you lost your sight.
Not really.
Okay. Wow.
not entirely. I knew how to not drown. Okay.
Basically the same. That's about as far as I go.
So yeah, it was very, I mean, honestly, I think the hardest sport to learn as a totally blind person, you know, between running, biking, and swimming, I think is swimming, because it's so technique oriented that, and you try to explain visual technique to a blind person, like they can't just watch a video or watch you demonstrate the swim stroke, right? So like, and even if your coach is trying to demonstrate a stroke, you can't really feel them in real time as they're swimming through the pool. So it's just, it's very like when we get new athletes who are totally blind, who've never swam, that's honestly the hardest thing, is just trying to communicate everything that goes into a proper, efficient swim stroke. You know, yeah. So that really took the longest for me, and it's still like my weakest sport, definitely. But yeah, it's, you can tell like someone who's blind, but they swam as a kid, they'll, you know, it takes you a little bit to figure out how to like trail the lane line and how to, you know, figure out where the wall is, stuff like that. But once they get it, they're good.
Do you find that as a blind athlete, I'm thinking of specifically with like swimming and technique and how you're holding your body and the arm extension and the rotation of your torso. Do you feel like you've developed a greater sense of proprioception as a blind athlete?
Definitely. Yeah. Because there's so much awareness of space that you have to do to swim, you know, down a lane line or even just in a straight line, open water. So it helped me work on that to the point where I even got better at walking outside with my cane, keeping straight lines on the sidewalk, stuff like that, just because, you know, it's a sort of the same mental game of, you know, which way is straight, even if there are no landmarks to go off of.
Yeah. How cool. What a unique experience. And then with the run, are you guys just kind of like you said, you're tethered or hand tether something to your guide. Yeah. And in that case, are you like predetermined, like this is our pace and this is what we're going to hold, or how do you adjust pace on the run?
Yeah. So it's all, well, so with the swim and the run, it's obviously like, it's all on the athlete's pace. So ideally you'd have a guide who's at least 10% faster than the athlete so that they're able to do their pace as well as, you know, keep enough mental focus, sort of pay attention to the road and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so with the run, it's, you know, it's paced on the athlete. And as you're running, if it's a hand tether, you have to coordinate the arm swing a little more, which can be a little more complicated, which is why a lot of athletes, especially like the faster athletes, will prefer a waist tether, 'cause you don't really have to worry about coordinating the arm swing or the hand position.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Are you coordinating pedal stroke even on the bike?
Yeah. So with a tandem, there's a timing belt or a timing chain that synchronizes the front and rear cranks. And so that chain is on the left side of the bike. And so there's no way to not pedal it, in synchronous.
Got it. Yeah. So when there's just one derailleur, I assume, on the bike, yep. When it shifts gears, it's the same for both of you.
Right. Yeah. So the timing chain's on the left side of the pilot crank going down to the left side of my crank. And on the right side of my crank is a normal like front derailleur and then cassette like chain, normal drivetrain setup.
then how do you communicate like standing? Is like, does your, because that's one thing that I could think of where if you don't stand, suddenly your guide, you know, gets out of the front and the captain's swaying the bike side to side. That could be super disconcerting to say the least.
The first time that happened, I didn't understand what "do you want to bomb up this hill" meant. And so I said, obviously, yes, because what am I going to say? No, you know, not going to say that. So I said, sure, yeah, let's do it. And so next thing I know, I feel the bike frame start like swaying side to side. And I'm like, I mean, you know, I didn't say anything. I sort of figured it out, but it was definitely like, oh my God, what's going on? This whole bike is shaking.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, actually the first time we tried standing was during a race 2 years ago. And we were like trying to catch a tandem in front of us, and they had they took off. And so my pilot just yelled like, you know, stand. And then we stood. And then, so my tandem has couplers in it, so the frame will break apart. And we heard one of the couplers sort of pop a little bit, and he was just like, sit. So that didn't last very long. But no, I mean, with, you know, with standing, same with like flying mounts and dismounts with trap, like it's all, you know, you practice it very carefully first, and you're probably pretty scared, and that's normal. And then you just do it a few times, and it becomes more comfortable and less scary. You know, it never becomes not scary.
Sure. Are you like, is your captain kind of saying like, counting down to like certain things, like left turn in 3, 2, 1 sort of a thing, and standing even in like 3, 2, 1, is that how you guys operate?
Exactly. Yeah. So, during a race, obviously it's like, it's hard to hear sometimes at the wind and things. So we boil it down to the bare necessities, and that's describing actions that require my attention. And so those things are cornering. If we're going to change speed, so like sprinting or, you know, whatnot, and then standing, those are the main ones I could think of. And so it's, you know, ideally I'd have the route memorized ahead of time, or we've like pre-rode the route, the race course. So I'll know what to expect. But basically, yeah, it's like, you know, hey, there's a left turn coming up, 3, 2, 1, left turn. And generally, instead of saying the turns, they'll tell me coast or not, because if we're turning, we're going to pedal through, then it doesn't require anything different. So they might not even say anything, versus, you know, if it's like a sharp 90, they'll be like 3, 2, 1, left pedal up, or left, you know, 3, 2, 1, right pedal down. So it's just the focus for sure is on the things that require me to do something different. So, and then anything beyond that is just, you know, if there's time or if there's, you know, a place to insert it without ruining the race, or, you know, without distracting from anything, it's just, you know, hey, like we're coming up on the lighthouse, you know, 5 miles to go or something like that.
Got it. How do you memorize a course? Because traditionally what a lot of cyclists would do is they'd watch videos of the course, look at the course map, something like that. What do you do to memorize a course?
Yeah. So it's definitely a lot easier the more inclines or descents or turns there are, because it gives me, you know, like tangible things to connect. So like, for example, like a time trial, that's just a straight out and back. That's the worst, because there's nothing for me to hold on to, you know, versus a very, you know, short, like a very short square loop where there's a lot of turns and we're doing many laps of it. That's the best, because, you know, we're riding it a lot, so I'm getting to know it. It's, you know, there's not more than 5 minutes in between each turn or something, so it's easier to conceptualize. So obviously, since I can't watch video, I'll get someone who is sighted to describe the course, and I'll either build it sort of just mentally in my head, or if it's complicated, I'll even like map it out on a piece of paper with wiki sticks, like sticky, you know, like tube or something. Anything like tactile to feel. If someone who's not the best at describing things, if that's, you know, who I'm riding with, then I'll even have them take a paper copy of the course and just trace over the route with those wiki sticks, or, you know, like worst case, we'll just get a pen and just really like scratch into it, so I can just feel the scratches.
Got it.
But anything where I could just feel and conceptualize, cause like, you know, otherwise I sort of, you know, similarize it to doing a trainer road workout and not having my phone next to me. So like just like 2 hours of pedaling and you have no idea what's coming. And it's like, you don't know if it's a 30-minute interval or a 1 minute, you know, it's just,
yeah, that would be so hard.
That would be so mentally draining. Right. So
yeah,
that's what, like, that's what's doing a race course that I don't know. That's sort of what that's like, you know?
Yeah. That's actually a good pivot to your training. I want to focus on that. So you use Trainer Road. So, in which capacity or like what value does Trainer Road serve for you as a blind athlete in your training program?
So Trainer Road is actually, it's the most accessible app for like that has training plans and training programs and stuff like that. So I'm able to actually like use the buttons and read the power numbers and cadence and all that stuff in the app, which is amazing because all the apps I've tried to use previously, you'd be lucky if you were even able to log in, you know, so like, which is unfortunate. Obviously it's one platform, one app where that controls the bike and has the programs and plans. Like it's all baked into one, which is great because either with myself or with new athletes on my team, trying to, you know, teach multiple apps to someone who's newly blind or something is a little complicated. So the more simple I can make it, the better. And it's just, you know, there's a forum and a podcast obviously that goes along with it to answer questions. It's just, it's everything baked into one, which is simple, you know, and that's why it's cool.
That's so cool. How do you, when you're training inside, do you hear the power targets? Is that how you keep track?
Yeah. Yeah. So on all iPhones, there's a screen reading software called VoiceOver built into, you know, every Mac product basically. And so I turn it on either on my phone or on my MacBook, I'll run Trainer Road on the MacBook instead of the phone. And as I swipe on the screen, it'll tell me the different areas on the screen. So I can have it sit on the time remaining in interval. Sometimes I'll do that. And then just flip back and forth to hear like what power number I'm supposed to be hitting and then just get straight back on like the countdown time.
Awesome. And then having erg mode has to be a huge help with your smart trainer, right?
It's okay. So funny you say that. So it's the first year or two of my riding, all I did was erg, which is amazing because like, you know, it hits your numbers, right? But so we took a new athlete on the team who's never done a cycling race before. We took him to nationals and we actually were talking about this when we got back that like erg is great, but there's something about the mental, the mindset of responding to resistance versus like aggressing, like being aggressive, you know, like attaining the resistance that it's just, I don't like, I think so. I do half and half. I do half erg, half manual shifting. And I think ever since I switched to half and half, it's helped me hold power outdoors.
Awesome. I do the same thing as you actually. So I do almost all of my training, actually these days, all of my training, not in erg mode. And not necessarily, I wouldn't say that it gives me like some sort of like, and now I'm 3 minutes faster or anything like that.
Right.
There is something about that mentality, at least for me. And it sounds like it's similar for you in the sense that like when I'm proactively going after that power target and doing what I need to hold it, I don't know. We could just be fooling ourselves, right, Francesco, into thinking, but who knows?
Totally.
Fooling ourselves, if it works, then it works. So whatever it might be. So how do you fit in training amidst all the other, so you work with Achilles International, then you live in Manhattan. So I mean, riding outside has to be pretty tough. And obviously this is why you train inside, but when do you fit in all the training that you have to do?
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of early mornings, just waking up and, you know, trying to just get the training in or late evenings. I, as much as possible, try to avoid evening workouts just because I very rarely do an evening workout and feel like I really nailed it. It's just, you know, the whole day has gone by, like my energy is lower. So it's just as much as possible. Like I'd rather wake up, you know, 2-3 hours, whatever it is earlier, and just do the workout and just go to sleep early, either the night before or the night of, and, you know, handle it that way. The weekends, obviously that's the time when, you know, I have a little more flexibility. And so that's when I'll potentially do something longer, either indoors or outdoors. But that, I mean, even outdoors, that introduces like the complication of actually having to find a pilot and coordinate with a pilot that's, you know, either on the same training, like trajectory as I am, or who has time, like a few hours to dedicate, you know, which is, if it's like leading up to a race, then it makes sense. But like year around, it's just hard.
Yeah. What sort of training do you follow? And like, what are the plans that you follow and what sort of volume?
So that's actually funny. You also say that. So the conversation I had with my coach very recently is like, with intensity, I do pretty well. I shuffle between mid and high volume of, you know, of the base build and specialty phases. The part that's really lacking and that has always been lacking are those long aerobic rides, because it's hard to do, you know, 5-hour rides indoors on a trainer and, you know, trying to find someone outdoors again in Manhattan to do like a 5-hour chill ride. So like, you know, I'll hit like the normal, you know, 90-minute, 2-hour workouts during the week. I feel like the ceiling that I'm bumping up to right now is just that lack of aerobic, like very zone 2 long rides, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's the goal. That's the thing to implement the rest of this year going to next year, is just really try to focus on building the volume up, not just all intensity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
This brings to light like a question that I would have that maybe we can help other athletes that are blind in this case as well. Being in Manhattan, it's a big population center, and you have an organization like Achilles International. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, what sort of suggestions do you give to athletes that are blind athletes that may be listening to this that may not have that sort of social network immediately around them?
Yeah, definitely. So I would say, Achilles, we have, you know, more than 80, 90 chapters all around the country and around the world. So definitely, you know, look up, see if there's a chapter around you or a chapter of a different organization, right? There are other like adaptive sport organizations that do vast, you know, whole wide different type of sports. Like this year I tried skiing for the first time, which is a whole other thing, but it's just, you know, like one, like reach out, right? Whether it's through Facebook or Google, just trying to figure out, you know, getting within a like-minded group of people. And honestly, even if it's not in person, getting in a group of like-minded, you know, fitness people who are blind or low vision virtually can help so much, because then you get all the resources, right? Like you figure out like, oh, this app speaks with this trainer, that trainer, you know, can talk to Trainer Road in a very accessible way. And then so it's just, you know, it helps having the resource. And then beyond that, like there's such a huge percentage of people with disabilities that are sedentary, right, in their daily life, whether they're blind or have a different type of disability. So even if it's just taking your cane and walking around the block, making that a habit every morning, just, you know, doing something, even if it's just slightly more than what you did yesterday, I think it helps so much.
Yeah, awesome. That's good advice. So training for national championships, they happened in Boise, Idaho, just this last bit. What was the race like? And like the course in particular?
Well, the time trial course was basically on a wind farm, and it was just a straight line on this like road going to nowhere. And so it was, and you can kind of like feel, you know, you can inhale sort of like the smoke from the wildfire. So it was very like coming out of Mars. That's how it was described to me in pictures. And it was really strong, like a crosswind, like, you know, wind coming from like diagonal. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. it was an interesting experience. It took us like 9 minutes to go one direction and like 15 minutes to go the other direction.
Whoa. It was a strong wind.
It was, yeah. And it was also the first time I ran a full disc wheel in the back too. Maybe not the time to try that. I mean, it was, I think it didn't hinder us. I don't know how much it helped, but yeah, it was wow. It was interesting. And the road race was, they changed the direction of the race the morning of, or at least that's when we heard about it. We were like practicing pre-riding the course, and all the arrows are pointing like left turns. And we showed up the morning of, and they're like, yep, we're doing right turns, which obviously changes a lot of things. There was a beehive farm thing, like on one of the roads. So like you could feel like bees tinging off your helmet at one point, like, you know, each lap, really hot, as you can imagine, But I mean, that being said, it was like super fun. Just, you know, there's so few para events or like on a seasonal basis that each one you go to, it's just like kind of reunion, you know, everyone kind of knows each other. Everyone's just saying hi. It's a whole, it's really fun.
Yeah. What a cool experience. Yeah. Like, I could see that. And we take for granted a lot of the races that we have that are, you know, outside of that community for sure. I guess another question on this is what was your pacing plan? Like, did you go through and say, I want to be able to do X watts for X amount of time? Mm-hmm. Like, how did that work?
Yeah. So something I actually experimented with for the first time, like leading up to it, this race is power outdoors. So obviously like I get my power numbers through audio, and you can't wear headphones during a race. And so, but that being said, like pushing watts outdoors, right? Totally different from pushing it on the trainer. So I spent a lot of time with those, like the bone conducting headphones in, paired with my phone, paired to my power meter outdoors, like leading up to the race, just trying to pace and, you know, figure out what intensity feels like what. I definitely went out way too fast, as I always do, but less fast than I would have in past years, which is, you know, like I view as like, I didn't die as much like in the latter half. I definitely went out like way above 400 watts for the first, you know, like lap or whatever. And then I just pulled it back. I give myself kudos to like, I pulled it back before my legs started burning.
Smart. Yeah.
And the other thing, like that coupled with the headwind, like it's always so psychologically, like you want to push more, right? Because you feel like they're not going as far or as fast. And like, I don't have the visual feedback of seeing the road go by. So like for all I know, we are going nowhere, you know, because I don't know what gear we're in. So we could have been in the easiest or the hardest. I don't know. So it was just, I mean, I thought we paced it pretty well. Besides that first little, you know, couple minutes, it was pretty even. Cause like I have my pedal paired, you know, to a computer so I can like review it after the race. And it was decently even. So I think it was, I think that was good.
So what is your FTP and then what sort of FTP increase have you seen using Trainer Road?
Yeah. So I started Trainer Road, and I was about like 200 watts in FTP and very much like, you know, like I did the ramp test and that's the other thing. So right now I'm about like mid 320s. That was as of like earlier this year, beginning of this year. And it's this thing where the ramp test FTP for me is very different from the 20 minute. Like with the ramp test, I'll be in the mid 300s for sure. Mm-hmm. I think because of that, like very unbalanced thing where I do a lot of intensity, but not a lot of long rides. I need to work on bringing that longer fitness or endurance up, I think. Sure. So, you know, the times I've done a ramp test, it like, I'm just not able to do the workouts at that level, you know?
I can't wait to get you on adaptive training. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. No, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a huge increase, 120 watts that you've seen, a huge amount of work. Over what time frame has that been since you started using Trainer Road to now?
I'd say like through like 2 years, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to go.
2 years, maybe a little more than that. There's like definitely for the first year or two of doing triathlon, my focus was, you know, figure out how not to drag, like just swim, you know, like figure that. This past year was actually the first time I got to really focus on just the bike and just, you know, really getting comfortable. I feel like, I mean, you know, there's so many podcast episodes that you guys do, right? How like the FTP number doesn't define you as a cyclist. Mm-hmm. And that I got to understand that more because even like my FTP increase last year at this time, you know, compared to this year, it's only like 30 watts different, but I'm able to hold so much higher of an FTP or, you know, of my FTP now compared to last year. I'm able to recover so much faster. Like it's just the two numbers are similar, but the two athletes are totally different, you know? So
yeah.
It's cool to just see that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's that sort of fitness that you see in the depth that comes from the, you know, years of training, and it doesn't always get reflected in FTP. Do you have to find a cap? Like, how do you select your captain for such an event like national championships? And do you train together for months? Like, are you trying to find somebody with the same power to weight ratio or how does that work?
Yeah. So it helps if they have tandem experience. And so, the guy that I did, the trials with Ralph, who he's on the like a local New York City cycling team. That was his like sixth time on a tandem. And so I had met him 2 years ago or so at a race where my guide for that duathlon ended up getting the flu the night before. And so it didn't come to the race. And so one of my friends like ran up and down the start line, just like shouting if anyone could, you know, guide a blind athlete. And so that's how I met a guy to guide me on the run. And then this guy who just came to, you know, watch his girlfriend race basically, and had no idea who'd be drafted into cycling a blind person on a tandem. So like, literally, like I met him the morning of, you know, it's a crazy story. I still can't believe it worked out as well as it did. But so him, he's a crit racer normally. And so I just texted him, like, I'm trying to do trials in a few months. Are you interested in guiding? So he said, yes. So that's a little bit of an anomaly where, you know, he'd only been on a tandem a few times before. The guy that I did national with, Brian, he's been on a tandem before. We did cycling nationals in Tennessee, Knoxville, 2 years ago. But the last time he and I had been on a tandem was at Knoxville. And so, you know, and then after that was the day before the time trial. So, you know, ideally, you know, ideally it's not that close. Ideally you have more time training with them. It is what it is.
Yeah. You mentioned that in the road race that you had a mechanical, which you got, still got second, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But you had a mechanical. Did that cause you to get like dropped from a group? Was there a group or what was the race dynamic like?
Yeah. It was like 2 miles into the race and we cornered and just came out of it. And like, there's so many things that it could have been, right? Like we came out of it a little weird and maybe shifted, you know, I don't know what it was, but basically the chain dropped. And so we had to stop and put the chain back on. So we lost like a minute on the group. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the next, whatever, 40 miles or so, whatever, was just catching up with someone, you know, resting a little bit and then either pulling with them or taking off and trying to catch the next group.
So frogged your way up. The groups. Wow.
So was fun. I mean, when it was clear near the end that like we're not catching the first place guy, but like we have enough of a little bit of a gap from the third place guy. Brian, there was like a bunch of kids with like super soakers with ice water standing on the side. That was like the official cooling station of the race. And so like unbeknownst to me, he like yelled at them to like nail me with the water. So that was like the most surprising part of the race where like I'm doused with this ice water 40 miles into this scorching hot race. And I almost like jump out of my bike shorts. It was like so surprising. So that was
a welcome surprise, bit, just yeah. the same.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Wow. How cool. Francesco, I feel like we've already gone for almost an hour and I feel like you and like, I could ask you questions forever and you probably get sick of me asking you those questions, but, this is, really insightful to think of the sport from a different perspective and to think of it from, cause we just attach everything and we view everything very literally through that lens of vision. Right. So it's so interesting to think of cycling from that different perspective. Are there things that you do as a blind cyclist that you feel like could help, maybe even just like a perspective shift that could help us, whether it's as cyclists or just as people in general?
I mean, honestly, the thing that comes to mind, and I don't know, I mean, you tell me if you agree or not, like, I feel like something that I need to work on is kind of the opposite. So like, I need to focus more on getting the numbers and stuff outside versus I feel like a lot of, at least the people that I ride with who are sighted, they're so like married to numbers. That it like to the point where it almost becomes a little detrimental because they're not like in tune with how they're feeling almost, whether it's RPE on a race effort or, you know, nutrition or I don't know, like it's, I guess just the focus on the intangible, you know, I don't know if that's good or not, but that's at least what I could think of.
I feel like you've probably got like a deeper level of intuition built up, right? Like, and because you have to rely on that. Whereas a lot of the time we get away with going away from that intuition. And then when you get into the layers of like numbers and everything else, you get even further detached from that intuition. And that's a good point.
Yeah. That, and just, I would say the only other thing that comes to mind, just like getting out of the comfort zone, right? I feel like with so much in para sports, whether it's cycling or not, it's like, it never, like very rarely is something like perfectly 100% ideal. Like there's always either you're trying something new or you're experimenting, constantly changing and adapting. Like that's just a really good, I think, mindset for people to be in, just this constant state of adapting, improving, learning different things, learning new things, you know?
Yeah, that's a good example. Meanwhile, there are us bike racers that are like, well, the sprint is 200 meters not long, not 350. So I'm out. I'm not going to do it. Yeah, we stay within ourselves. We're pretty good at that, aren't we? Yeah. That's a great reminder to reach outside of that comfort zone. Francesco, this has been awesome. If athletes want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, I'd say the best thing, and something I'm trying to get better at, is Instagram. So I'm at Team Francesco Official, and it's team because I feel like, you know, anyone who, like, I get a lot of feedback, obviously, or like I get a lot from just the mental thought of that there's people, like, you know, rooting for me, I guess. That's why it's Team Francesco Official. So that's me on Instagram.
Yeah, we're all rooting for you. This is awesome. This is such a cool experience. The many, many, many thousands of people listening to this right now. So, Francesco, I appreciate you doing this. Stay on, because I got a few more questions for you, but we'll cut it here for the podcast. And I just appreciate you doing this. Appreciate your example. The bravery that you show. I don't know how you do it. I'm terrified thinking of racing a tandem. So, but I appreciate you sharing your perspective and helping all of us gain a different perspective, and also helping us learn about how to become faster. So I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you so much for doing what you do. Without you and Trainer Road, I definitely 100%, like, there's no doubt in my mind that I would be where I am right now. So thank you.
Oh, it's, like, genuinely our pleasure. It's exactly why we do it. So absolutely. Thanks, Francesco. Mm-hmm.